Right, so then I'd like to thank the organizers for the great conference and invitation and all that. I'll talk about geometric transitions, large and duality, integrable systems, and other things, but there wasn't room on the announcement for other things. So let me start with these and let's see how far I get. So we've seen in just about every other talk in the past week and a half, geometric transitions. I'll encode the picture this way. We have a family of varieties, Calabi-Yau's, X mu, specializing when mu is 0 to some singular x0. And then we resolve x0 by another variety x. This being geometry. In physics, you'd like all the x's to be Calabi-Yau's. So in particular, you want this to be a small Crippant resolution, so X itself is going to be a Calabi-Yau. And the thinking is, the X mu's live in one family, they specialize to a point in the boundary, and now you have a way of creating a new Calabi-Yau, and now you can start deforming it and moving away, and you're on another component of the moduli of Calabi-Yau's, and presumably all the different components of the moduli space meet each other this way, and you can move from one to the other. So in that sense, it's a transition from one moduli space to another through a singular point. The description that I give here is deliberately non-symmetric. This side depends on a parameter, and this one doesn't. There's another description which is symmetric, where on this side you put a complex structure parameter, and on this side you put a Kähler parameter. So letting x become x0 is the same as letting a Kähler parameter specialized to a point where the volume of the exceptional divisor or exceptional curve goes to 0, while going from x mu to x0 means changing a complex parameter. So that's the picture you see in mirror symmetry. I'll write down only complex parameters suppressing the Kähler parameters, so you get a somewhat non-symmetric picture. So formally, x sub mu is going to be a family of Calabi-Yau's, but I'll stress complex structures on Calabi-Yau's. X0 will be a singular member of the family, and X its Crippant resolution. Large N duality is supposed to be an equivalence between closed strings on one side of the transition and open strings on the other side. So I'm two-thirds through the talk. Let me elaborate this diagram a little more and connect it with, embed it in a slightly bigger picture. So we have X mu specializing to X0 resolved by X. We can also take the mirror images of things. So the mirror image of X mu is going to be some other Calabi-Yau Y. And again, according to my crazy convention, I'm only writing the complex parameters. So as the complex parameter changes on X, there will be a Kähler parameter running on Y, but I'm not writing it. So there's just one complex structure on Y that corresponds to these. Okay, so this, so the vertical maps are going to be mirror symmetry. What's dual to the specialization of the complex structure is going to be a specialization of the Kähler structure, which looks like a resolution. So there will be a singular Calabi-Yau Y0 to which Y maps. And there will be a specialization coming from the other side. So I have a family of Calabi-Yaus Y nu, where nu is again a complex parameter, specializing at time 0 to Y0. So here you have a more complete diagram. And I guess I can use my fancy collection of charts here. So this is going to be 2B closed string theory on X mu. Under mirror symmetry, that goes to 2A closed theory on the mirror Y. The horizontal equivalences are large and duality. So 2B closed strings on X mu go to 2B open strings on X. Where are they open? Well, these are going to be strings whose boundary will lie on the exceptional curve, the curve that curves that collapse in this resolution. So there is a natural real two cycle here, which will serve as the brain. Under mirror symmetry, that two cycle will go to an odd dimensional or three cycle. So this will go to 2A open string, where the boundary is now on the three cycle. So in Y nu, you expect a special Lagrangian three cycle, which is the vanishing cycle for this degeneration. So if you believe that there exists an ordinary mirror symmetry between the closed string theories, and if you believe the large N duality prediction, then you should believe that mirror symmetry extends to incorporate the brains in this way. So this is mirror symmetry. This will be open mirror symmetry, or mirror symmetry with brains, and the horizontal maps will be large N duality. And we know that this mirror symmetry converts to 2B theory, which amounts to paired integrals on cycles in X mu into closed string Gromov-Witten invariants on Y. So that's what we have on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, we have the open mirror symmetry. So that converts integrals on chains in X, just an X, with boundary on the exceptional curves, presumably to open string Gromov-Witten invariants on Y sub nu, with boundary on the special Lagrangian cycles that give the degeneration. So there, in a nutshell, is the collection of dualities that one would like to use to try to compute some open string Gromov-Witten invariants. There are several techniques for computing open string Gromov-Witten invariants. We heard from Emmanuel in the first week about the localization technique, which has been the most successful one. We would like to talk about, another possible technique that is being developed. And there's some hope that it will apply at least sometimes to a closed case as well, to compact collabias, not only to open ones, but at some level. So this is definitely in progress. A very exciting development occurred, what was it, a year ago or so, with the work of Dykoff and Vafa. And the new ingredient that they throw into this mix is that they relate the B model of topological strings in the local case on a local collabial via these larger dualities to matrix models. And that allows them to actually do computations, get a lot of the invariants. My little problem is that I have no idea what the matrix model is, so I'm not going to be able to explain that, but in a way what we're doing is an end run around this. We're trying to come up with an algebra geometric way to understand something equivalent that will produce similar results and hopefully will work also in compact cases. So let me give you the typical situation in which Dykoff and Vafa work. We start with Z, which is the conifold. Think of it as being fibered over the affine line with coordinate little z. So explicitly, this Z sits inside C4. It's a hypersurface in the vector space. And you can write the equation as y squared equals uv plus z squared. So it's just the cone, and you just map it to the z coordinate. That's your fibration over the affine line. Well, we saw this one. It's kind of exciting in its own pedestrian little way, but it's just one thing. It doesn't have any parameters. So it's much more interesting to create larger collabials. One way to do this is to take a map from the affine line to itself, given by an arbitrary polynomial, which I will call W prime. So W prime is just going to be, well, let me just write what W is. So W is going to be a polynomial on X with coefficients given by a vector A. So just summation I going from 0 to, let's say, n plus 1, AI, X to the I. So you fix numbers AI, and you look at this polynomial of degree n plus 1, and take its derivative, called that W prime. That's a polynomial of degree n. It gives you a map from the affine line to itself. Pull back Z, or take the fiber product. So let X be the fiber product. You can just write it explicitly. The equation of X, well, X is also going to sit inside C4, but a different C4. Instead of the Z coordinate, you use the X coordinate. And the equation is simply minus y squared plus uv plus w prime of x squared equals 0. So it's a more complicated equation, but it's still a collabial. Z has a unique isolated singularity. X has n singularities. So x has n isolated a1 singularities at the points where u equals v equals y equals 0 and w prime of x equals 0. That gives you the n solutions. And it's a collabial. You can write down its volume form. Omega x is just du, dx, dy over u. And you check in local coordinates. That's actually a regular holomorphic 3 form. So all is well. So let's look at this picture as depending on the parameters A. The A's, the coefficients of W, are the parameters of this family of axes. I can call this X sub A if you want. So when A equals 0, you get that x, or x 0, is singular along an entire curve. That curve, you can think of it as the affine line, this coordinate x. It's just u equals v equals y equals 0. For any other choice of A, when A is not 0, you only get, as we saw, n singular points. There are a couple of different ways you can view what's happening. One is the algebraic geometry way, which is at time 0, you have a bunch of singularities. Other times, you don't. There's a topological way to view this, which is at time 0, you have a one-parameter family of singularities. Or maybe let's resolve, go to the resolution. Then at time 0, you have a one-parameter family of spheres, the exception or curves. And at other times, when A is non-zero, you still have a one-parameter family of those spheres, except they're no longer holomorphic. They've now become C infinity. So what you have is a transversally holomorphic family of these spheres, and it's holomorphic only at the endpoints where you actually see things in the holomorphic world. So in some situations, it's profitable to think topologically in terms of C infinity maps. At other times, it isn't. And in this talk, I will not really emphasize that aspect. But well, there's n plus 1 of them. A is a vector. I goes from 0 to n plus 1.
If A is 0, then W is 0.
Yeah, A is 0 just means that W is identically 0. That means all the coefficients are 0. I really mean that. Maybe. Let's see. No, I just meant non-zero. Any polynomial that's not identically the zero polynomial has a finite number of zeros. Well, counted with multiplicity, that would be n plus 1. Okay. So, the first thing you can do is you can integrate your holomorphic three-form of the Calabi-Yau along these spheres, especially if you take the topological view and pretend that these spheres really exist even when A is not zero, except that they're not holomorphic. And you can try to integrate over the fiber so you get a one-form on the underlying curve, and then the integral of that one form recovers the superpotential W. So that's the physical sense of this W. It really is, well, W prime is the derivative of W, which is the superpotential. Anyway, that's not quite the Dyckhoff-Waffa picture. So what they tell you to do is to combine these, let's call them superpotential deformations. So those are with parameter given by A with an additional set of deformations, which I'll call smoothing deformations. Where I'll call the parameter mu, same mu that occurs on the board upstairs. So explicitly, I'll write x sub a and mu for minus y squared plus uv plus w prime of x, so the a's go in here, this is wa prime of x, plus f mu of x equals to 0, where f mu of x is going to be summation. You write down basically those coefficients that are still missing. I goes from 0 to n minus 1 mu I x to the I. There's a square missing somewhere, yes. On the w prime, wasn't it? Yeah. Thank you. So you just complete the square, and you see that formally, to get all the formations, you only need to go up to n minus 1, the nth coefficient, you can already hit from completing the square. And magically, you write this down, and this matrix model, which I already disclaimed to understand, gives them a quantized superpotential. So it's a superpotential with some fuzz built in. And the fuzz means it's no longer a function of the variable x, of which it used to be a function in the classical case. Instead, x gets spread out, becomes multivalued. So this new potential, w, is going to be w, depending on a and mu, of course, on the deformation. But it depends not on x, but on a new coordinate, x tilde, where x tilde is a coordinate on the hyperelliptic curve with equations, let's write it down, c tilde a mu has equations y squared equals w prime of x squared plus f mu of x. So instead of the affine line, you have a double cover of the affine line. X tilde is a local coordinate on this double cover. So you get a superpotential, which is now a two-valued function on the affine line. So that's a quantum effect. The fuzz comes into this multivaluedness. And then you expand w in special coordinates, and you take the coefficients of the superpotential w with respect to appropriate special coordinates, and that's the recipe for finding open string Gromov-Witten invariants on y sub nu, which is the mirror of the geometry that you're dealing with. So our goal, and that means this is joint work with Emmanuel, and with Antonella. I should do this alphabetically. It was Bogdan Floria, Antonella Grassi, Tony Pantev, Christian Hoffman, whom I'm afraid I have not met yet, and anyone else who would like to join? I'm sorry. Anyway, our goal is to understand this geometrically as best we can and extend as much as possible to include compact Calabi-Yau's as opposed to just these local. Well, you have to work out the symmetry. Not sure. I'm not sure we even know explicitly.
I don't think there's many focal length that you have to do.
Okay, now you want,
you're
saying you just follow it with your hearing, both in terms of
on something. Yeah, I don't think we've ever written down, have we, what Y nu really is. Yeah, it's a good question, but we don't know the answer.
Yeah, you're quite calculating something if you don't know what the mirror is. Dirac
and Bathen made some statements, so I mean, the
we have to take a little bit of time to look at this particular. If you're just taking an initial matrix model that has mirror, but if you take this kind of material, so which essentially means that some of these coordinates are periodic, then there are obvious mirrors. I don't think that this particular model has a
quite possible. I mean, Weiss of Nu will never explicitly comes up anywhere.
Okay.
So I'm perfectly happy to.
Some
which will behave like the.
So you're
inverse.
Some A-model-like structure in the B-model.
Yeah.
If it had a mirror. Yeah.
That seems to be the plan. So let me show you that some compact examples exist that are of interest. In fact, there are lots of compact examples, and though we do have some sense of what the mirror is. And that's where we'd really like to take this eventually. So here is a simple compact example taken from a paper by Katz, Boyson, and Plesser, two of whom are in the room. So in that case, I'll try to use analogous notation, so you'll see how the analogy works. You can take x a mu to be the intersection of a quadric and a quartic. So q is a quadric, degree 2, and r is a quartic, degree 4, inside CP5. So that's a Calabi-Yau threefold. It depends on a bunch of parameters, which are the coefficients of Q and R, and it's easy enough to count how many of those parameters you have. So the case that A equals mu equals 0 is going to correspond to, geometrically, to the rank of the quadric being 3. That's the lowest rank that gives you any interesting geometry. That's the same as saying that the singular locus of the quadric is a P2 inside P5. And then this P2 is going to intersect the quartic R in a curve C, which will be a plane quartic curve. So this is a genus 3 curve. This curve C plays the role of the affine line in the Dyker-Waffa case. This is the curve of singularities of the model when A and mu, both parameters, are set to 0, before we started deforming. Okay? Then we deform in the first direction by taking A non-zero, so we have a superpotential, but mu is still zero. We haven't deformed, we haven't smoothed yet. We've only deformed away to the point where we have a finite number of singularities instead of the curve. Where is that finite number? Well, you look at the geometry and you see that the deformation directions exactly correspond to canonical differentials on the C. So geometrically, they correspond to lines in this plane. Each line will cut the curve in 4 points. Those 4 points will be the ones, that, the singularities that survive as you deform in that particular direction. So mu equals zero is obtained simply by going up to rank equal 4. Or I guess I should say less than or equal to 4. Okay, so that means that the singularity of the quadric is a P1 now instead of a P2, still inside the same P5. And that says that the singular locus of XA mu is just 4 points, which are the intersection of this curve C with a line in the plane. And those 4 points correspond to specifying some A in the canonical class. A is just a canonical divisor on the curve that determines a line, that determines the 4 points. So the A parameter, the thing that gives you the deformations up on that board there, corresponds to canonical differentials here. So in the geometric picture, the A's are canonical differentials. What are the mu's? So the general case, where A and mu are both allowed to be non-zero, is going to correspond to a general quadric. So now the rank is less than or equal to 6. Turns out that ranks 5 and 6 do not make much of a difference, so you may as well go all the way to rank 6 now. And that just says that X is generically non-singular. We've smoothed it out. We've totally lost the singularities. And so I'd like to encode this picture in a diagram like this. We have the small, medium, and large moduli spaces. The small moduli space corresponds to this case, where a and mu is 0. So it parameterizes your Calabi-Yau's on which you have a curve of singularities. The medium moduli space parameterizes the deformations where you have a finite number of singularities, and L is the smoothing. A better picture would involve another moduli space, M tilde, which maps to M. I guess you can have S tilde, but S tilde will be equal to S. So what I'm pointing out here is that S is not a moduli space of Calabi-Yau's in and of itself. There are two Calabi-Yau moduli spaces in the picture. They are the large moduli space and the medium tilde moduli space. So this is the moduli space of the resolutions. Right? Those are Calabi-Yau's, so they have a moduli space. M is just going to be the image of M tilde inside L as you contract. This map is not necessarily an isomorphism, and that's going to be important momentarily. In fact, it will be finite to 1, so that will create singular. So even though M tilde is a Calabi-Yau moduli space will be smooth, its image in the larger moduli space will have serious singularities, and that we claim is what makes the Dyker-Waffa picture fly. But then exactly when you go to the small locus, the map on it is an isomorphism. So S is the same as S tilde. You can think of it either as parameterizing certain singular Calabi-Yau's, which can then be smooth, or you can think of it as parameterizing the resolutions, and then there's no way to deform it further. This is a complete moduli space. So this is the key picture. In our case, or in the Katz-Morrison-Plesser case, you can work out the dimensions. So the dimension of S turns out to be 83. The dimension of M is 86. The dimension of L is 89. So that says that the differences are 3 in each case. So you have 3 A's and 3 mu's. Yeah?
So the normal vector is different
What do you mean by normalizable?
Well, in the sense that the periods, the associated variation of the periods of the holomorphic tree form either at most logarithmically algorithms or not.
Uh-huh. I guess, yeah, I mean, we just see this in terms of the transition. The first batch, the A's, are actually deformations of the resolved Calabi-Yau, and they also can be realized as certain deformations of the singular Calabi-Yaus, but then you have additional directions in which you can go. That's the only sense we can make of it in the geometric setting. Sure. And the different, there's a different number of those periods.
So the algorithmic behavior will come in.
Okay, so the large andronity, again, is going to give you an expansion in the mu coordinates, or actually in some special coordinates which are equivalent to the mu's. And then you start reading off term by term your invariant of some non-existent mirror Calabi-Yau, or in the compact case, an existent Calabi-Yau. To zeroth order, the content of what you get is something like this. Roughly, it says that the limit as mu goes to zero of the integral over gamma mu of the three form omega on x mu is going to be the integral over gamma of omega x. So here, gamma is a three chain in x. The boundary of gamma is some combination of exceptionals, exceptional p1s. Gamma naught is its image in x0, which is now a three cycle because we've exactly collapsed the boundaries. And gamma mu is going to be its deformation to x mu, so it's still a three cycle. And x mu. So this is soft. This is just playing around with a little bit of mixed Hodge structures and a little bit of Clemens-Schmidt sequence, and it just comes out. And I guess that says something about counting disks. We'd like to be able to count annuli or whatever. Gene zero invariants with more boundaries. So anyway, it's clear that the point is we need to be able to compute these periods. It all boils down to being able to compute periods. And I think I'll show, I may not quite get into this, but the natural interpretation of W is that it is what's called a normal function. In other words, it's a section of a family of intermediate Jacobians. The Jacobians of the X mu. And what we need to understand is the behavior of these intermediate Jacobians, or equivalently, the periods, as mu goes to zero. And according to Dyagraph and Waffa, we will study it not just as mu goes to zero, but as both A and mu together goes to zero, and we will utilize a singular structure there to learn more information. So, so now I've done two-thirds of the talk, and I still haven't mentioned integrable systems, so let me bring those in. So, and algebraically integrable system is an algebraic variety X, which fibers over some base B, where the fiber are complex tori, in fact, abelian varieties, so algebraic complex tori. And you want this to be an algebraically symplectic. That means that there exists on it an algebraic 2-0 form, which is everywhere non-degenerate, closed, and so on. Similarly, you can define an analytically integrable system. Just replace the word algebraic everywhere by the word analytic. So it doesn't seem like a big difference, but actually it makes a rather substantial difference in that you have a lot of complex tori that are not algebraic. So let me just, to emphasize, state that in the algebraic case, T is an abelian variety, which means that it satisfies the Riemann's two bilinear conditions. The periods of T, so the period matrix is symmetric, and its imaginary part is positive definite. In the analytic case, T will be what we'll call a polarized complex torus. So that means the period matrix is symmetric, but not necessarily positive definite. That's the basic distinction. And that's exactly what you get for the period matrix of Calabi-Yau's. Instead of something positive definite, you get something Lorentzian. You have one negative eigenvalue. So it's not. Exactly. I insist on type 2-0. I'm sorry?
T also has 1-1.
Yes, but that's not an algebraic structure. That's you do have a lot of other structures in the picture. But the algebraic one, you want it polymorph. Yeah. So symplectic, algebraically symplectic, that means 2-0 non-degenerate closed form. Okay. So the two basic examples of tori are, if C is a curve, then the Jacobian of C is an abelian variety. If X is a Calabi-Yau, then the Jacobian of X, so this is defined to be H3 of X, with complex coefficients, modulo half of the cohomology, so you divide by H3-0 and H2-1, and by the full lattice to get a complex torus, is a polarized complex torus with Lorentzian rather than Euclidean signature. And both of these do fit into natural integrable systems. So into ACS, which stands for either algebraic or analytic integrable system. So what are those? In the Calabi-Yau case, you let M be a moduli space of complex structures on some Calabi-Yau. For example, the middle one that we had before, but it could be anyone. And then let M tilde be the C star bundle. So this is moduli of the Calabi-Yau plus the holomorphic volume form. So in each Calabi-Yau, you have a C star of those. And then take the union over all x omega in M tilde of the intermediate Jacobian of X. And Markman and I showed a million years ago that this is an analytically integrable system. In the curve case, take S to be an algebraically symplectic surface. I'll give you examples in a second. And let B be the family, or a family of curves C in the surface, let's say a linear system. So you fix a line bundle on the surface and take all sections of it. So you have a family of curves. And take the union over C and B of the Jacobian of C. This is Mukai's integrable system. So again, the theorem is that there is a natural algebraic two-zero form on this total space for which the map, for which each of these abelian varieties is a Lagrangian subvariety, maximal isotropic, and so on. I guess I forgot to say that the dimension of B is the dimension of T. The T's have to be Lagrangian. In subcases of this, well, one subcase, which I will not write down, is if you take S to be a K3 surface or an abelian surface, those give you interesting examples of Mukai's system. But the subcase that will actually come up for me is you take C to be a curve, you take its cotangent bundle, you take that to be S. It's non-compact, but nevertheless, it contains a compact curve. In fact, it contains lots of other compact curves. Those would be the spectral covers of C, and this gives Hitchin's integrable system. So how do you see that any one of these objects is an integrable system? Let me give you quickly a criterion for deciding this. And that'll be the end of my detour into integrable systems. So what I'm saying is, if you just have a family of complex structures over some base, and you put some flat structure over the base, you basically think of this base as part of a vector space, you can determine the family of tori by the period matrices. So you have a family of symmetric matrices, symmetric n by n matrices, depending on another set of n parameters from the base. And the question is, does this or does this not come from an integrable system? And the criterion is the following. The following are equivalent. So let me set up the notation over here. So start with a vector space V. Let's go to its dual, and let's think of B as being an affine space modeled on the dual. So B is maybe a finite, an open subset of V dual, or maps to it somehow. Right, so V is just a g-dimensional vector space. And we're given pi x to B. That's a family of, let's say, polarized complex tori with period map. Let's call it P. So that's a map from B to sim to V non-degenerate. So for each point in the base, we give ourselves the torus. We specify it by its period matrix, which is symmetric a non-degenerate, but I'm not saying positive definite, I'm just saying that the imaginary part is non-degenerate. The imaginary part is non-degenerate. Okay, so then the following are equivalent. One, there exists a complex symplectic sigma on X such that the projection from X with the symplectic structure sigma to B is Lagrangian. and sigma induces the identity from the tangent, the relative tangent bundle, so that's just the pullback of the trivial bundle V, to pi upper star of the cotangent to the base, which is also pi upper star V. So I'm just adding a normalization so that it'll really be one-to-one correspondence rather than having extra parameters here. So given any symplectic structure, you can always arrange for this under some appropriate change of coordinates. Two, the period map from B to sim2V is locally in B going to be the Hessian, the matrix of second partials of prepotential. So there's a function on, a holomorphic function on B whose matrix of second derivatives gives you this period matrix. And third, the differential of P. So this is a homomorphism from the tangent of the base to sim to a V. In the way I arrange things, this is isomorphic to V tensor sim 2 of V. And we know representation theoretically, this tensor product splits into the direct sum of two representations. One is the three-way symmetric product, and the other is the hook representation. And the condition is that it lands in the symmetric part. So basically, a way to summarize this is that to give yourself an algebraically integrable system is the same as to give a field of cubics on the base, symmetric cubics on the base, determine an integrable system. So how do you see that this Calabi-Yau integrable system is an integrable system? You have to give a field of cubics on the base, and of course, you just give the Yukawa cubic, and everything follows from there. How do you see that the Hitchens system, or in the Mukai case, where do you see a family of cubics? You can do it algebra geometrically like this. So you say, let me skip a little bit. Yeah. So we have the tangent bundle to the surface, restricted to the curve, contains the tangent bundle to the curve, and maps onto the normal bundle to the curve in the surface. So just having the curve sit in a surface gives me the short exact sequence. Saying that S is symplectic says that this is the same as the canonical bundle of C. So the short exact sequence determines for me an extension class, and I'm saying that that extension class is the cubic. So this determines an extension class in X1 of the normal bundle by the tangent bundle. And you compute what that is. It's H1 of something. It ends up being exactly H0 of the canonical bundle of C cubed. Dual. Just check this by pseudo-duality, right? H. You get an H1 of the tangent bundle square, which is the dual of H0 of K cubed. And this thing maps to sim 3 of the dual of canonical differentials. So we get ourselves a cubic on the base, just as we should. So that justifies that this is an integrable system. In fact, you can write it very explicitly, say, for Hitchens. So this is something that Tony and I did a while ago and never quite wrote up. So let's say S is a point in the base. Let me just do it for SU2. So the base of the Hitchens system is just quadratic differentials. And alpha is a tangent vector at S to the base. So it also lives in the same vector space, but we kind of distinguish them. One is the space, the other is the tangent space. Then the cubic is going to be a cubic function of alpha, right? It's to be a cubic on the tangent space. So it equals, you take alpha cubed over s squared. So this is a meromorphic quadratic differential. And you take at each of the zeros of s, you take the quadratic residue of that and sum up over the points. That's our formula. So that gives you explicitly a cubic expression in alpha. And then you integrate it three times, you get the prepotential for H. Except we don't know how to integrate it three times. I'm sorry? Well, it's the square of, this is a locally it's a quadratic differential. Take its square root. That's an ordinary meromorphic differential. Take its residue, it's defined up to plus minus. Square it, that's intrinsically defined. So a meromorphic quadratic differential has a quadratic residue. Okay, anyway, let me get to the point before I have to start talking about the mythical second talk. So back to what we want to do. I want to connect these integrable systems with the Dyker-Waffa picture. So I'll remind you of our setup. Do I still have it on the board? I'll just put it on. Our setup involves, we have small, medium, and large moduli spaces. Something here we denote x0, 0. Something here is xa, 0. And something here is xa, mu. In the parameterization that I gave you before, this is a singular Calabi-Yau with a curve C of singularities of some particular type given by some group. So in the examples that I'll actually write down for you, we'll just have A1 singularities, but you can actually work this out at least for all the ADE singularities. And, you know, various parts of the story have been worked out to various degrees. XA0 is a Calabi-Yau with finite number of these singularities. And this is a smooth Calabi-Yau. So that was our picture. And again, M comes in two flavors. There's an M and M tilde, depending on whether you're parameterizing the smooth things or their resolution. And the basic question is, we want to understand the Calabi-Yau integrable system for the large moduli space near the point where A equals mu equals 0. Somehow we want to expand the periods or the family of intermediate Jacobians in the A and mu coordinates around 0. Okay, so the central claim is that to first order, the Calabi-Yau integrable system of the large moduli space decomposes as the product of the Calabi-Yau integrable system of the small space that's in there, and we can't say anything about it because we haven't degenerated that part, it's still there, cross a normal or transversal piece, which is the Hitchin system for the curve C of singularities with the structure group G of the type of the singularities. So it's a very pleasing statement. This, of course, assumes that the singularities are uniform, that you don't have any jumping. If you do, you will presumably get Markman's generalization involving meromorphic Higgs bundles, where the poles would be exactly at the points where the type of the singularity jumps, but we have not worked that out yet. So let's see, how much do I want to say about this? Yeah. Okay, so, so the picture is that this is a Calabi-Yau curve. Calabi-Yau threefold was a curve C of singularities. That curve of singularities shows up in the Hitchin system. Yes.
So what do you mean by a Calabi-Yau
system of that? So that's this thing
down
right here. This basic example. So you take the base is going to be the moduli of Calabi-Yau in the large system together with a holomorphic volume form on them. And the fiber is the intermediate Jacobian, and you take the union of all those.
Small.
I'm sorry?
Small.
Well, this was for any moduli space. In our particular case, we're doing it for L and S rather than for M. Did I answer the question?
S, I think he wants to put S three, maybe S 12 or something. Maybe that's what I think.
Well, S twiddle is equal to S, yeah.
I understood that part of the blackboard for smooth Calabi-Yau, which you say S twiddle.
All right, we'll put a twiddle on it. Since they're equal, I won't quibble. All right, so I gave you a few minutes for this to sink in. Exactly. Yeah. So let me point out that this cannot possibly be an actual equality. It can only work as a first order approximation because the intermediate Jacobian of a generic L in the family is going to be a simple torus, an indecomposable torus. It cannot possibly be equal to another torus cross an abelian variety. It will not contain any abelian variety whatsoever, in particular not this one. However, we claim that if you expand the first order, you will get this equality, and that should hopefully be enough to get some of those open, genus zero open invariants, but that's still in the future. So we have two proofs or approaches or whatever. Whether it's a proof or an approach depends on whether you're a physicist or a mathematician. In A and mu simultaneously, because the normal coordinates to S in L consists of both sets, you cannot distinguish them at the singularity. You can only distinguish them at the smooth point of M. At the singular point, there is no natural distinction. Right? Okay, so there's the algebraic geometry proof, and there's a physics proof. So maybe I should remove the quotes from physics. Yeah. So the algebraic geometry version, if I want to summarize it in a buzz phrase, you degenerate to the normal cone. So you replace your Calabi-Yau X by the normal bundle or normal cone to the singularities, and thereby you go to the open Calabi-Yau. So let me just mention an analog that already is in print. So you go down from three dimensions to two dimensions. And then you're looking at this Mukai system instead of the Calabi-Yau integral system. So there's a result that I worked out with Lorenz Ein and Rob Lazarsfeld, three well-known physicists, that says that if you start with S symplectic, so let's say S is a K3 surface, and C is some curve in it, and you look at n times C, where n is an integer, and you look at the linear system n times C and pick some other curve in that system, D. So the Mukai system for this D means the union of this integrable system of the Jacobians of these curves. And generically, it's a smooth curve, and you have a nice abelian variety. But as you degenerate into the actual n times C, that's a non-reduced curve, all hell breaks loose. You have to figure out what is the limit of the Jacobian. It's clear that it becomes reducible. One component will parameterize rank n vector bundles on the curve C. Another parameterizes line bundles on the non-reduced scheme. And then there's a whole slew of other components sandwiched in between. So we work out. These are components of the limit. So the limit as D specializes to n times C of the Jacobian of D is reducible. I'm saying one component, on one extreme, you have the Jacobian of n times C as a scheme. At the opposite extreme, you have the moduli space of rank n bundles on the reduced C. And then there are various other things hiding in between, which I will not bother you with. OK. But the point is, we can look at the Mukai system for these Ds. On the other hand, we can look at the Hitchin system for C with group SLN. And we show that these two are asymptotic to each other. In other words, the limit of the Mukai system as you approach zero is the Hitchin system. And we make sense of it in the paper. A specific statement you can make is that the nilpotent cone in the Mukai system, the fiber over zero, is an affine bundle over, or a torso of, the nilpotent cone in Hitchin system. So the point is, you compare these systems by, you construct a threefold script S, which maps down to some affine line in such a way that over zero, well, over a non-zero T, the fiber will be the K3S. And over zero, the fiber will be the cotangent space of C. So you're degenerating the K3 to the normal bundle of the curve in the surface. And then you show that this degeneration allows you to take the entire integrable system that lives on S and degenerate it into an integrable system that lives on the cotangent bundle. So that's sort of a quick outline of how that works. And the algebraic geometry approach to this story is basically amounts to jacking up the dimensions from 2 to 3 and making the appropriate modifications. So let's see. I'll just sort of outline the picture that we get. So we can do this in the case of the Calabi-Yau threefolds, although we've worked out all the details only for A1, and you know, we're sort of filling things in. But the picture we get is this. Our A's, we decided, are parameterized by canonical differentials on the curve C. Such an A determines, to please Jack, two things, an XA and an X. Let me call it XA squared, or I could call it XA tilde. XA will be the one in M tilde. XA squared will be the one in M. So I'll explain in a minute why I think of this as A squared. Well, the reason I'm thinking of it in A squared is because M is contained in L. A general thing in L will be parameterized by a quadratic differential. The specific quadratic differentials that correspond to the points in M are the ones that are squares of ordinary differentials. So I can really think of A squared as an element in H naught of KC squared, which is the Hitchin base, which is the parameter space for L. Okay, so I have this map, and you see from this picture that the map is not an isomorphism. In fact, it's not 1-to-1, it's 2-to-1, because A and minus A have the same square. And that means that that M itself has a singularity. It looks like a vector space modulo an involution. So it has some conical singularity. Okay. I can. I'm sorry?
It's not A1.
What I'm telling you is A1. Various statements go various distances. So let me just claim it for A1 for now. So for example, the next statement is specific, is only known right now for A1. I claim that I can realize XA as the total space of, well, X0 was the total space of the canonical bundle of F. So my picture is this. Let's have, so, X00 contains a curve C. When I resolve, it will contain a ruled surface, F over C. Each point of the, each singular point blows up to a P1. So F is a ruled surface over C. And let's, yeah, so when I, degenerate, let's see, so we have the small, medium, and large spaces for the compact family, and we're degenerating these to corresponding spaces in the open model, or the linearization, the normal bundle. So I need three more names for the same spaces applied to the open case. And Tony suggested, in honor of the organization that sponsored much of this research, to call this T, G, and V for tall, grande, and venti, since much of the work was done in Starbucks. I'm not insistent on that. The point is, as I degenerate from S to T, right, then this will specialize to the total space of the canonical bundle of F. The normal bundle will be just the canonical bundle of F. And so that's an S-tilde. Then when you blow it down, you're just blowing down the zero section F back to the curve C, thereby creating the singularity of the local model. So what happens when you turn on a non-zero A? It's going to be the total space, not of KF, but of an affine bundle modeled over KF. So instead of a line bundle, we now have an affine bundle. That's like a line bundle without a section. If you do the computation, affine bundles are parameterized by H1 on F of KF. That's the group that parameterizes all affine versions of this line bundle. And it's easy to see that this is the same as H0 on C of KC by integration along the fibers, which is where A lives. So A determines a non-trivial affine bundle over this line bundle. And while X00 contains the entire F, so there's a one-parameter family of rational curves, XA0 contains only 2G minus 2 lines of F, namely the zeros of the differential A. Those are the only directions, right, because the affine bundle maps down to F, but F does not embed back in. And you check that the only lines that will embed in will be the ones that correspond to the zeros of A. And in fact, we can construct the whole thing synthetically. So that means we can create a family of threefolds, such of open threefolds, such that if you take the intermediate Jacobians, or the compact part of the intermediate Jacobians, you recover exactly Hitchin's system as the family of intermediate Jacobians. So you can create something called PA, which will map to F, which maps to C. Let's call the combined map P. So my XA, as I constructed it, is an affine thing. So this is just going to be the compactification. So instead of an A1 bundle, it'll be a P1 bundle. So PA over F is going to be a P1 bundle. PA over C is going to be a family of Hirzebruch surfaces, Fn's, right? P1 bundles over P1, but the type jumps. So generically, you have an F0, which is P1 cross P1. Did I say that backwards? And at 2g minus 2 points, you have an F2. F0 jumps to an F2, and that's where you have the singularity. And we can realize the whole thing by constructing, there's a P3 bundle. So we can construct a P3 bundle over C such that PA maps into it. Each fiber of PA maps in as a quadric. The general one maps in as a smooth quadric. That gives you the F0. And a finite number of them maps in as a quadric cone. That's the F2 was the exceptional curve collapse. So we have this explicit construction of a P3 bundle over the curve. And then you have a certain linear system that gives you quadrics in the fibers. And any section of that gives you one of these XA mu's. So you get the whole family this way. So basically, what this says is you can construct the generation of the compact Calabi-Yau's to the open Calabi-Yau's, which you can then compactify into singular compact varieties. And we can construct the limit explicitly and show that its family of intermediate Jacobians is exactly the Hitchin system. So that creates the degeneration, which explains why the periods of the Calabi-Yau's, when you degenerate, specialize to the periods of these algebraic curves. Maybe I shouldn't attempt to give the physics argument, given the time. I'll just say what is involved in it. You just write, you try to justify on a priori physics grounds that this is the right thing to do, that you really get the Hitchin spectral covers out of quantizing some appropriate moduli problem. So you write down a theory which involves all the fields for the open string. That, according to Emmanuel, is a graded holomorphic Chern-Simons theory, which means that your basic objects are going to be complexes of vector bundles. And you think of the cohomology as encoding where the brains live. So if you have in the brains at a point P of the curve and N anti-brains at another point Q in the curve, you'll encode that by a complex whose cohomology is going to be N times OP in place 0 and N times OQ in place 1, except you want to represent this not by sheaves but by vector bundles. So you'll replace this by something like O on the curve of minus NP mapping to OC plus OC minus NQ mapping to OC again. So here's a three-step complex whose its injective here, the cohomology here is NOP, and the cohomology here is NOQ. So this is an object in your theory which realizes a simple combination of brains and anti-brains. And then you write down all the fields in a huge four-dimensional complex, and you compute a moduli space, and you get that the moduli space actually is fairly reasonable on a Zariski open subset. It looks like the nth symmetric product of the curve across the nth symmetric product of the curve. The interesting stuff is what happens when you start having collisions. And then you go ahead and make some ansatzes, and you quantize it, and you actually see the Hitchin spectral curves coming up out of the quantization. So this part sort of follows along the lines of the Dyker-Waffer work, but actually shows you that when you apply the work in this case, you actually get the Hitchin spell covers. So I'll stop here.